It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Man, what a great week. We've got lots to talk about. Lots of great things tonight. In fact, for today's show, the podcast, we appreciate you joining us. In fact, later on in this hour, we're going to have our second fan of the week, Moses Geddes. We'll find out about him and his teams, sponsored by our great friends at Russell's Hairstyling in Williamston. Let's see, what else we've got going on today? Well, we've got Mike Ray. He'll be the second interview, and actually third interview, the second half hour. He's my racing friend, my buddy. We'll be talking about local racing at Southern National Speedway and so much more. Racing in NASCAR, the big boys, and we'll have a lot of fun in the second half hour. Plus, still to come, we have with us from Fire Confer, remember him, Dr. John Bream will be joining us. We'll be finding out life after Fire Confer, what's going on there. And we'll start things off with Paul Tedder. Paul Tedder is a retired EC professor. He was actually at the 1963 National Championship. And you say, Dave, why would you have him on? What's the connection there? Well, he was there the last time that Loyola Chicago was in the Final Four, and they won the national championship. We'll be talking about that in just a little bit. In fact, the big weekend we have now with the national championship with the Final Four on Saturday night, it's going to be interesting. They'll have Loyola Chicago versus Michigan, and then the nightcap will be a big heavyweight fight between Kansas and Villanova. What a great Final Four Saturday night. It's going to be amazing. All on TBS. Should be a great night, Saturday night. Speaking of the Final Four, let's go now to our interview with Paul Tedder, who was at the 1963 championship game where Loyola Chicago, 55 years ago, won the national championship. Let's go to that interview right now. You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and right now we have a very special guest, being that there's a huge event this coming weekend we'll be talking about. We have with us right now retired ECU professor Paul Tedder. He's also a volunteer at Vidant Medical Center, and he has an important story to tell because he was actually at the 1963 National Championship game, the last time Loyola Chicago was in there playing at Cincinnati. Paul, thank you so much for coming on and spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wanted to ask you about that game. I know that Loyola Chicago had beaten Duke in the Final Four, so they played Cincinnati. What was that national championship game like?
Well, the interesting part was that year, Loyola represented a kind of interesting change that happened in the 60s in terms of the racial makeup of college athletics. And Loyola, which was school in Chicago, and when I grew up in the 50s, I would go to the Chicago Stadium and Loyola would be playing a doubleheader. But anyway, they started four African-American players. And interestingly, in that championship game against Cincinnati, Cincinnati started three African-American players. So seven of the 10 players on the floor at the start of the game were African-American. And Cincinnati had won two previous NCAA championships, beating Ohio State each year in the championship game. And so they were trying for the third, which would have been a first at that time. I think in terms of the changing color of basketball, a couple of years later, Texas Western, when they beat Kentucky, started an all-African-American lineup. And sometimes that's noted, but the trend had already begun. And the game was at Freedom Hall. My college roommate, high school friend, we scored two unexpected tickets and drove down, and we were mid-court, about the 20th row. And it's a game that went to overtime. And I can still picture, in some ways, it's not unlike the NC State win in 83 with the, you know, the tip-in or jam-in after Wittenberg took his shot. Well, in this game, at the end of the game, Now, Vic Rouse had the ball hanging on a rebound, hanging above the basket, and put it in, and they beat Cincinnati by 2 points.
That's amazing. And also, I know you told me about a great book I wrote down that I'm going to have to read. It's by Michael Linehan. It's called Ramblers, Loyal to Chicago, 1963, that changed the color of college basketball. You said it's an excellent book.
Well, yeah, it documents part of that whole era. And if David, I give David these books to read, and there's another one about that era that he's got to write a book report for me on, which in a different sport, football, it was the role that Bear Bryant played in the integration of college football, and particularly college football in the South. But this book is good because it gives you the sense of the history and Ireland, who was the coach, you know, changing the face by who he recruited and who he played. And it's a contribution. I mean, that's 55 years ago. That's really history now. I don't feel that old, but in fact, I guess if I've been to 3 national championship games. In the 50s, I saw Bill Russell play and win his second straight national championship. It was his last college game. And then I was there when Al McGuire and Mick Marquette beat UNC in the championship game in 77.
Those are obviously really big games. So finally, I wanted to ask you, with Loyola Chicago playing against Michigan on Saturday night, do you think they have a chance to win Saturday and on Monday?
Sister Jean believes. Well, she prays. You have to believe. It's just great. Competition, rivalries are great fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Paul Tedder, who was actually at the game in 1963, where Loyola Chicago beat Cincinnati in overtime, a really big game. Thank you so much for coming on the Sports Objective Podcast.
Glad to do it. Glad to do it.
Thank you very much, Paul Tedder, who is the retired EC professor and a volunteer at Vidant Medical Center, and does a great job there at the 1963 National Championship. Loyola Chicago winning the national championship on a tip-in against Cincinnati. Should be a great Final Four. Cannot wait for that. Our great interview there from Paul Tedder, brought to you by Jason Williams, who is an attorney in Beaufort, Martin, Washington, Terrell, and Hyde counties. He has family law, criminal law. He does traffic tickets, social security disabilities. He does wills and estate planning, consumer law, including fraud and illegal debt collection. Call him now at 252-948-0600 or jasonwilliams.com. jasonwilliamslaw.com. He's located in Washington, North Carolina at 317 West 2nd Street. Call him again at 252-948-0600 or jasonwilliamslaw.com. It's time now for our next interview. It's with Dr. John Bream, a fire comfer. You may know that great movement that started last September. Some people say it's great. Some people say it's not. We'll take a look now, and let's go to that interview with Dr. John Bream right now. You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast here, and we're on the line with us right now. We have Dr. John Bream. Of course, you may know that name from the fire comfer movement, and we wanted to have John on to talk about his reaction to the director of athletics, Jeff Comfer, is leaving May 1st to East Carolina University. And, John, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I wanted to ask you, get your reaction. I know that that with going all the way back to the Fire Comfer movement, explain to everybody what the Fire Comfer movement was, how it got started, and then we'll go to your reaction after the fact. I think that would be good for folks that are listening for the first time and don't know what we're talking about.
Sure. So the Fire Comfer movement started back in roughly September when, you know, things just really weren't going well for the Pirate football. And, you know, there's just kind of been an overall decline in general athletic performance since 2016, when the baseball team went to the Lubbock Super Regional. And really ever since then, things have just really not gone well. And the Pirates had kind of been in, you know, next to last place, or certainly in the bottom tier of the conference, pretty much every sport since then. And we had a lot of people, you know, sort of message boards and everything, that started talking about the performance of the athletic teams. And, you know, unfortunately, when you're, when you have the guy in charge, you know, sort of the buck stops with you. And a lot of people started to really dig deeper, more into kind of what was going on with athletics, not just the performance, but you, the, what's going on behind the scenes with the finances and things like that. And a lot of people just, you know, became, you know, really frustrated. And we decided to, you know, take more of a deeper look in. And some guys, we were talking about it on Hoist the Colors before the one of the football games, I believe it's the South Florida game. And they said, you know, maybe we should, you know, get a, you know, do something drastic to call attention to this. And we started talking about, you know, flying an airplane. And I was like, well, I mean, I'll work on getting that together if, you know, a couple people want to go in with me. And, you know, I started a GoFundMe page to, for that purpose, and was able to raise the entire amount. And, you know, so I called the Outer Banks Airplanes out in Manio, and they were certainly accommodating of, you know, flying the banner that said Fire Copter Go Pirates. And, you know, that's sort of kind of where it came from. I think a lot of people, it became sort of a drastic measure because more traditional means of communication, such as emailing the athletic director and emailing the supporting staff for the athletic department and the board of trustees, they really just weren't responsive. And we felt like we had to do something more to get their attention, because, you know, Pirate Nation was really frustrated. They didn't really feel like they were hearing us. And, you know, we started, you know, in addition to the plane, you know, we did the Facebook page and really just tried to educate people about what was going on and let them sort of come to their own conclusions about what needed to happen.
Well, you, now that FireComfer, I guess, is it a moot point now to have a Facebook page named FireComfer? What are you going to do now that Jeff Comfer is going to be out as May 1st as the athletic director? What's the name of the page going to be now?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Facebook, if you change the name of the page, it you have to basically start over. So we would lose everybody on the page and have to start a completely new page and all of that stuff. So the page, you know, will stay Fire Comfer, but, you know, the mission seems to have, you know, shifted a little bit. As we all are probably aware at this point, when it was announced by the Board of Trustees that Comfer would be stepping down on May 1st, the chancellor and especially the chairman of the Board of Trustees, Kieran Shanahan, had a lot of, I think you could say, really interesting things to say that didn't sit well with Pirate Nation. And so, you know, now we're working on, you know, really just kind of talking about those things and really more of a, what we see this sort of going into is more of a watchdog role where we feel like people who don't have EC's best interest at heart really shouldn't be, you know, stewards of the university and saying things that, I hate to say, you know, felt like a lot of those comments are sort of talking down to the Pirate Nation, and we want, you know, people who bleed purple and gold leading us and being transparent and accountable with us. And until we have that, we feel like the page will continue to exist in sort of a watchdog role for East Carolina.
I have to ask you because we have the spring game this weekend, but when we're recording this this interview right now, do you plan on flying any more planes coming up in 2018? I know Inquiring Minds, people want to know, are you going to fly any more planes, John?
No, there are currently no plans to fly any planes, no sir.
That's one of my personal questions I wanted to ask you. I know people want to know that too. Wanted to ask you about now moving forward. I know you said a watchdog group. What do you think about, I want to get your reaction to Dave Hart coming to East Carolina. Don't you think that was a good move by the chancellor and East Carolina to bring Dave Hart back?
I think that was an excellent move to stabilize the athletic department. You know, I think he'll get in and, you know, roll up his sleeves and get his hands dirty and get to work righting the ship, as we say on FireComfer. That's our sort of the page name stayed the same, but the hashtag changed from hashtag FireComfer to hashtag right the ship. And, you know, I think he is the right man for the job, and I think he's going to do excellent. And I think I have confidence I mean, that's the big thing is, you know, it's not that I think he'll do something. It's I have confidence in Dave Hart that he will help advise the committee on making a good basketball hire. And I think he will take a look at the finances and make some really hard decisions and get us, he'll right the ship for us.
Well, to me, wouldn't it be, I've said a lot publicly, but wouldn't it be nice to see a plan? I'm hoping from Dave Hart, and if he's listening, we'd love to have him on the show as well. I know he's got a lot of stuff to do, so we're not bugging him right now to come on. But don't you think it would be a great idea to see a plan, financial plan, and maybe a plan for, say, the athletic department over the next 5 years, what we should be doing? Like we've got right now the Southside project that's going to be completed in 2019. Okay, after 2019, what's next?
So I think that would be great. And I guess to Confer's credit, I would say one of the things he did was he had a plan. The athletic department had a five-year plan. And I think one of the biggest failings of that administration was they didn't really communicate that plan, although they had a great plan. If you read, they had a big, when the Undaunted thing rolled out, they had a big, I think it's 147-point plan. They accomplished about 90% of it, but they really didn't talk much about that. And, I think that was kind of one of the biggest things they could have done was communicated better. And, because there were some things there that could have been communicated well that I think they could have bolstered some support from Pirate Nation that they didn't do. So I think, I think they could do a much better job of publicly communicating what it is they're trying to do and try to win support of Pirate Nation and be transparent about it. And that way, instead of, kind of letting us assume things or question things, they can be out in front of it and let us rally behind them.
I want to ask you that very point. Okay, so I can't believe that you're saying Jeff Confer did something good, but I'm just joking. That's a joke, folks. If you don't, please. One thing I can say for Pirate Nation, please take a deep breath. No matter what side you're on, please take a deep breath. I like to make jokes, and I'll make jokes, and not at the expense of Jeff Confer, obviously. Wanted to ask you, so you're saying, what did you think that Jeff Confer and his staff did well at East Carolina? I know you talked about that with maybe they didn't communicate, but what did they do well at East Carolina?
Well, I think, they scheduled some solid series. I personally like the Appalachian State series. I like the Boise State series. I think the Wake Forest series will be another series that the Pirate Nation can enjoy. There were a couple of head scratchers. I'm not really sure why we're playing Georgia State. We maybe can recruit in Atlanta. We've got some great players from that area, but that one was kind of a head scratcher, and maybe Marshall. But I think there were some good series that he scheduled. I do think it's important that our athletes do well in the classroom, but I do think that that's more of an expectation sort of thing and not really something you should pride yourself on. That's not what I'm trying to say, but I think that's, meeting expectations. I don't think that's something that, I think I'll just leave it at that.
I was just going to interject, when the players don't do well, as some of our players haven't in recent times, then they're not eligible to play, right? They have to have a certain GPA, so they have to meet certain expectations or they can't even play.
Right, exactly. And, our GPA, really the increase was fairly modest. 4.5% increase in GPA in 5 years is not really something that, I think it's meeting expectations. An incremental increase in GPA is kind of what's supposed to happen. And obviously, Confer was the athletic director when Cliff Godwin was hired. And, he ultimately, his signature is on the contract, so he's the person who ultimately deserves to get the credit for it.
Yeah, and what did you, the Adidas deal, are you happy with that?
Yeah, I definitely think it's an upgrade over what we have with Nike. As most of Pirate Nation knows, Nike wasn't giving us anything financially, but just giving us the uniforms. And Adidas is giving us, I believe it's $1.65 million a year. I think that's the correct number. Somebody can fact check me on that. I'm pretty sure that's the correct number. So it's definitely any way we can increase revenues, I think it's definitely a good thing for East Carolina University.
I'm gonna throw something at you right now, and this is an audible for me. I think that there's been when it comes to the budget, and we know I'm not going to get into all the ins and outs of the budget. I don't know all the ins and outs of the budget, but I wanted to ask you, don't you think that we need to be more creative and innovative when it comes to raising money for the athletic department, since the fact that we're starting in like a $17 million deficit from the other schools in America? Wouldn't it be smart to raise money or to come up with different ways? Like, for example, maybe I've heard some people throw out the idea of, I know you remember this a few months ago, they threw the idea out on Hoist the Colors about naming the stadium, like having a market it out there and get somebody to have a title sponsorship. How do you feel about that and other things that we could do? What do you think we could do to help bridge that gap?
Yeah, I definitely think corporate sponsorship is one thing. I actually think I was the person that threw that out there on Hoist the Colors,
right,
if I remember correctly. So that's one thing. You know, we don't have a plethora of sponsors in, you know, Eastern North Carolina as far as, you know, large corporations, but, you know, there are a lot of companies that do have a presence down there. You know, BB&T, you know, Yak and Bank, you know, SunTrust,
Vidant.
Exactly. Vidant would be a big one. Grady White Boats. I mean, there are, you know, I don't, I'm not sure. Overton's, yeah, there are a lot of companies that have a presence in Eastern North Carolina that could potentially put their name on a stadium. So that's certainly one thing. I think that we need to get really aggressive with the Pirate Club. I'm planning to speak, you know, Philip Wood and I had a plan actually to speak today, but he is, you know, obviously very, very busy with the transition. And, you know, we talked and, you know, exchanged some text messages, and I told him I had some ideas, and he said he would be open-minded to whatever my ideas were. And I think that his plan is to have a pretty open dialogue with me going forward. And, you know, I kind of told him what my thoughts were to help. And, you know, I do think this is a time of healing, and I want to help the Pirate Club. You know, I'm not, you know, I put my money where my mouth is. I told, you know, I'd been one that said, you know, when Lebo and Confer are gone, I'll increase our Pirate Club donation, and I did it Monday. So I am, I encourage everybody, you know, who's a supporter of the Fire Conference movement to, you know, put their money where their mouth is in regard to that. And, you know, we've all got to realize that, you know, we've got to right this ship, and we've got to heal, and we've got to support the student athletes and support the Pirate Club. But I definitely think ECU could get more creative. I do think that we probably should go play an away game at, like we did down in Florida. You know, play some of these away games for a payday. And, you know, Southern Miss had to do it when they had some budget issues a few years ago. They stole that Nebraska game back. And, you know, I think we should probably do something like with the South Carolina game or that West Virginia game. I don't think either one of them are going to come into Greenville, I'll be honest with you. And I think we need to be proactive in selling those games back, and and maybe either play a, you know, lesser opponent at home, or, you know, go get us a guaranteed away game package. But I do think, you know, there are some things like that we could do, and certainly, you know, I think there's some things that the Pirate Club could do, and to increase the amount of revenue we're getting at East Carolina. And I would say to Jeff Confer's credit, again, something else I thought he did well was, you know, the NASCAR attempt, you know, marketing that ECU NASCAR. It didn't work out, but it was innovative. It was really cool that ECU NASCAR, that number 51 looked great. And I thought as well as a good design, it just, the sponsorship thing didn't work out, but, you know, I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, just because not every idea that's cool or great is going to work out, but you at least have to attempt it. Right. I mean, for example, when you look at when we were talking about scheduling, you look at Adidas deal, the Southside project. The biggest thing for me that I would say going forward is just simply let's see where the numbers are, And then from there, I want to see, like, for example, what Pirate Nation, what do these fans want? Like, for example, I've been throwing out the last couple of weeks an indoor practice facility. You know, what is the, you know, if the Pirate Nation wants that, okay, how much does that cost? You know, go through a, you know, step by step by step. And then they say, okay, it's going to cost, I don't know, 20, 30 million. Then we at the Pirate Nation have a fund that we say, okay, this is the money for, they did that before with, I remember for baseball, they did that when they were building Clark LeClaire. They had a special fund for that. For the baseball stadium. So they did that about 15 years ago. I feel like they can do the same thing again with the indoor practice facility and whatever. I'm not just I'm just throwing that out because I know a lot of people said that and I want that. But there's other things after 2019, after the Southside project, that we need to continue to build, baby, build. I've been saying that, build a whole bunch of stuff that we know that Pirate Nation wants, and it'll help with recruiting, right, especially when it comes to what stirs the drink, and that's football.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, a couple of things, you know, I would say here is that, well, I think one of the big aims, and probably the biggest aim of the Fire Conference movement, is just to listen. I don't think that Pirate Nation feels like they're being heard. And that would be the biggest thing if I could get one thing out there. You know, if I would go, if I want to do Kyle from LaGrange famous, Cecil, are you listening? The Cecil, are you listening moment right here is we need you to listen to us. You know, when he says, don't, you know, work with us, not against us, you know, we want to do that. I think everybody wants to do that, but we don't feel like you're listening. I think the common person in Pirate Nation doesn't feel like we're being heard by our leaders. We feel like that Kieran Shanahan and Cecil Staten and Jeff Comfer and crew, you know, really just aren't listening to us. And that's really the overarching thing we want here is we really want to feel like that you hear us and like we matter. And I think if we could start, you know, to get that sort of understanding back to our leaders, I think that would really go a long way. As far as, I do think you're correct about, you know, and what this Pirate Nation want. Yeah, that would definitely be a big consideration is do we really need, and I'll openly question this, do we need a, you know, now $60 million press box? I mean, I'll be honest, I think when this is all said and done, I think the cost is going to be closer to $70 to $80 million. You know, right now it's at $60 million. We've got to pay off at least 2 years worth of interest at about $2 or $3 million. I think it's probably closer to $2 million, and you know, so we're already into $62 million. If there's any sort of cost overruns, which basically all these projects have, you know, we're going to be into the mid-60s, possibly $70 million fairly quickly. And I just think we need to be very mindful of that. And I personally just wonder if we wouldn't have been better off to do a smaller scale nice project, you know, at a cost of like $25 to $30 million dollars, and then spent the, you know, 'cause we could have raised that money. Right. And then, you know, done some other things that we need, like an indoor practice facility and that kind of thing that I think would have been more helpful to the players. And, you know, I saw it, you know, at CJ, Chris Johnson, I think, you know, did the CJ 2K locker room, which is really cool. You know, we've got to do innovative things with our athletes and, you know, get our guys back involved in doing things like that. One of the interesting things, I went to Dallas for a conference in February, and I went over to Fort Worth to the Stockyards, and I wanted to go to by TCU Stadium. It's really cool. They actually keep their stadium. You can walk around their stadium 24/7. They don't lock it or keep it closed or anything. But I went and looked, and David, they don't have a press box. A lot of stadiums, you know, they have about a little 100-foot glass thing where all the media sits. But they don't have this big fancy press box, and I think TCU is doing just fine in football. And I think their fans are pretty happy. I mean, they have a nice club level section like we do, but you know, they don't have a press box, and I think we really need to focus on things that help the players, and the indoor practice facility helps the players, and a players' lounge helps the players, and a training table helps the players. But, you know, the press box, a nice press box, you know, with, you know, upper with you know this upper echelon seating doesn't really do anything to help the players. All it just caters to you know wealthy alumni, and you know the players. You know one of my a guy I talked to a lot, Shane Johnson, made the point that you know the press box, the players play on the field 4 hours at a time, 6 to 7 times a year. So that's something they're only going to see about 120 hours of their East Carolina career, and it really doesn't do anything for them. I think we could have done a lot better to do things, you know, that were more beneficial to the players.
Well, I will say, well, this is what I'll say to you that where I'm coming from, and I totally agree with what you're saying there. The problem is that the press box was built in 1978, and where I'm coming from is people hear me beat the drum about the plan. The reason I bring that up is that I think that there hasn't been a real good plan over the years. That press box should have been replaced years ago, and it hasn't been, and everybody just keeps pushing it back. And I think that that's one of the things that we're having to see now is that, okay, we should have done that years ago. We didn't, and now we're trying to play catch-up when it comes to our facilities. I think that in the future, we'll be better off if we have a plan. And obviously, there's going to be things that happen. You can't always stick to a plan. But at least if you have a plan, you have something to go by that you can alter and tweak. Like we were talking about, the cost of construction is going to change and obviously those kind of things. But I think that's what happened. I think that if you look at it, I mean, John, when I was in the 90s, that press box was almost 20 years old. And so we should have had a plan. And going forward, we can't do anything about the past, but we certainly can go do something with the future. And so that's where I think is we need to have a master plan over the next 10, 20, 30 years. What are we going to do? Obviously, we won't know all the stuff because the stuff, a lot of innovation and technology is not even out now that will be out, obviously, you know, in the next 20, 30 years. But I think that you make a good point. If from now on, if we do things the right way and start looking at things we need to replace at the right moment, we won't have to play catch-up and pay this absurd amount of money for something that we could have probably done incrementally along the way, right?
Exactly. I agree 100% with what you just said.
So finally, I know that you've got to run. You have a busy schedule. You're a doctor. By the way, you're a doctor in the Salisbury area, right? You're an ER doctor there. I know you're doing very well. You graduated the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina. We're very proud of that. I know the chancellor talks about that a lot, of the teachers, doctors, and nurses. And I wanted to give you a shout-out for working hard at Brody. And you're taking out in the community in Rowan County and doing very well.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I did an undergrad. I have a BA and BS, history and biology. I did medical school at Brody and finished in 2009. I stayed in Greenville, did my emergency medicine residency, and finished that in 2012. And, board certified in emergency medicine, worked my way up, and the medical director at Novant Health Rowan Medical Center in Salisbury, North Carolina. And I went a little further and got my fellowship status. So only about 10% of emergency medicine physicians have that. Yeah, so I'm definitely proud of my career and proud to be an ECU alumni or alumnus. I'm very proud of what I've done, and I want to do anything I can to give back to Pirate Nation for all that East Carolina has done for me.
How can people get in touch with you in case maybe they want to find out more information about what you're doing, or certainly it's not Fire Confer anymore, but if they wanted to join your movement or to just reach out, how can they do it?
Yeah, they have, obviously the Facebook page is public, Fire Confer. If you search for it, it comes up. If you send a direct message to that, it goes directly to me. I think my average response time is somewhere in the 2 to 3 hour neighborhood. Usually if I'm I keep my phone on me pretty much all the time, being in charge of the ER Salisbury, I have to have my phone with me all the time in case they need to call me for something for work. And I try to respond to everyone. Even if you don't agree, as you know, I've said, we're closing all 200,000 alumni. There is room at the table for everybody. I'm happy to have a civil discussion with anybody about what's going on in Pirate Nation. And if you reach out to me, I will definitely be happy to talk with you.
Well, Dr. John Bream of Fire Comfer, and of course of Rowan County with the ER, the ED, thank you so much for coming on the Sports Objective Podcast, and we'll check back in with you from time to time and see how things are going.
All right, that sounds great. Thank you for having me on, and best of luck as you get this thing going.
Okay, thank you very much to John Bream, Dr. John Bream, the Fire Comfer Movement, and interesting story, and we're moving right along. By the way, it's prom season now, and maybe you're looking for a great limousine service or a wedding, a birthday, anniversary, or maybe a trip to the airport. Well, call my good friend Mike Davis at First Class Limousine Service. He's a 5-star service. It's not where you go, it's how you get there. Stick with the best. Give them a call now. Call him now at 252-883-5120. 252-883-5120, firstclasslimousine.net. Don't take my word for it how great they are. Find out again at 252-883-5120. It's time now for my good friend Mike Ray, who we're going to shift gears now with him, and let's go to that interview right now.
You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and man, oh man, we're shifting gears now, and I said that on purpose because we're going to be talking about some racing. And back in the day, I've always loved racing, and one of my really good friends, and obviously he's more of a racing expert. He's forgotten more than I'll ever know with racing. I want to bring in now Mike Ray. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It means a lot, Mike.
Dave, thanks so much for having me on this morning. You know, Monday morning, beautiful weather, the 26th of March, yesterday, snow in Martinsville. Can you believe it? The first time since 1993 that we have not gotten the show in, so to speak.
I couldn't believe it. I was going to tell you that I had heard that, and it's amazing to me with Martinsville. We've got a lot to talk about, but speaking of Martinsville, before we get starting on, we got so much to do in so little time, but we're going to do it. Wanted to ask you about Martinsville. Who's going to win the Grandfather Clock? Who do you think?
I tell you, the Grandfather Clock, one of the best trophies in all of NASCAR. Crowd favorite, I guess, going in. He's coming off of 2 strong runs. The driver of car number 78, Martin Truex Jr., out of New Jersey, starting on the pole today. He could be a winner at the end of the evening.
Wow. So you like, I know he won last year with the championship, so you think he's going to continue to, it rolls over into 2018, and the short track, you know, that's one thing people don't realize is that to me, and I love the big tracks, don't get me wrong, but you find out what a driver really is, so to speak, when you deal with the shortest track is Martinsville, right?
Yes, sir. Since 1948, when NASCAR was formed, Martinsville Speedway, Martinsville, Virginia, the Grand Palace that Clay Earls designed and constructed, 0.526 miles, shortest speedway on the circuit. And they beat and bang and will put on a show this afternoon.
It's going to be fantastic, and we cannot wait about that. I wanted to ask you, as far as I know there's up-and-coming drivers, is there a dark horse this year that could win the championship? We wanted to ask you, as far as long-term, we know about Martinsville today, when you said Martin Truex. Do you think he repeats? Do you think there's somebody else, one of the young guns, to knock him off this year?
Oh, isn't it a great field of young guns? Mm-hmm. You've got Chase Elliott, Eric Jones. The list goes on and on. Daniel Suarez. These are young guys that have come into the sport, and they've proven themselves in the Touring Series, coming into the big league, so to speak. So, yes, I would look for Chase Elliott to be strong all year long. It's early in the season. He's had some bad luck early, but I think that he could get that first win in 2018.
Yeah, he's one that Chase Elliott, obviously his dad, is one of my all-time favorites. He had a tremendous career with Bill Elliott. And to think that his son is that makes me feel old, Mike, when you think that a driver you liked as a kid, a teenager. I was a teenager when Bill was, his dad was really big, and now here he is coming up now, and does that make you feel old?
No, sir. Racing keeps me young. I might be getting on up there, but I was so blessed to have grown up during the sport in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and now in the teens. This sport will keep you young. I feel great. I love to see all the young talent coming up.
Yes, and one of the great ways, that's a nice segue there, because one of the reasons I wanted to have you on this week is that we are going to have a lot of great, there's a lot of great competition across this great country of ours, and thank God that we live in the country where we do, where we can do the stuff we love, and racing is one of them for me. One of the things that's near and dear to my heart is the local tracks, and you and I have worked together in one track, and now we're going to work together in another. I want to bring in you because I know Southern National this weekend, for people that are anywhere near the Kenley, Wilson, LaComb area, if you're anywhere near that area driving distance, it's going to be a Saturday afternoon matinee show, right, Mike?
Yes, it is, yes. This coming Saturday, March the 31st, it'll be the Easter Bunny 100. 100 laps for the limited late models, 35 laps for the mini stocks, the Legends are going 25 laps, the Bando cars are going 20 laps, the Any cars are going 15, plus for fans that have never seen the USAC Eastern Midgets, these guys could break and make a new track record this Saturday. Grandstands open at 12, and the big show starts at 2 o'clock. So a lot of stuff going on in the region this weekend.
Certainly, Mike. And, you know, I was going to tell you that I know that I'm employed by that track, so it sounds like it's a shameless plug. But that track could seriously be on the NASCAR. I know it's one of the series, but I'm talking about one of the big boy series. It certainly could be on maybe the trucks, wouldn't you think? Would you give the trucks a shot if you were a NASCAR official for Southern National, that they'll have like a truck event there?
Well, Southern National Motorsports Park is one of the finest racetracks on the East Coast. 4/10 of a mile long, high-banked speedway with great, great facilities, camping available, practice available, open 23 and a half hours a day. It's just a great, great racetrack, one of the showcases on the East Coast.
It really is, and I know that one of the reasons I wanted to have you on as well is to talk about memorabilia. This guy, folks, if you don't know Mike Ray, you need to know Mike Ray, especially if you're a racing fan listening right here. He has, the great thing about Mike, he has stuff from yesteryear, a lot of really cool stuff, drivers that maybe if you're in the middle age like I am now, and you can remember back in the 70s as a kid, all the way up to present time. Talk about some of the stuff that you have, because it's really a lot of folks that collect a lot of stuff, collectibles. You have a lot of stuff, right?
Oh, I do. I have a little bit of everything, Dave. I just picked up a collection out of Florida during the off season. I just got in 150 pieces a week before last. All the great stuff. Cars, racing champions, Hot Wheels, you name the diecast maker, we've got them. Hats, T-shirts, earplugs, earmuffs, stickers, a little bit of everything for the race fan. Anything that you would need to make your weekend fun at the racetrack, we can hook you up with.
That's right, and I know that there's a lot of great stuff out there. But one of the great things is kind of like I said, stepping back into time where it's like a time machine when you can see, when you go and you see stuff with Mike and you see, oh, man, stuff like from Bobby Allison and Darrell Waltrip and Richard Petty. You've got a lot from the King and Dale Earnhardt Sr. You've got a lot of the big-name boys and maybe some of the drivers we've forgotten about, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a good selection of all. Just got in a bunch of stuff from the King's Tour, last tour in 1992.
Oh, man.
Immaculate-looking cars. All your track cars from every track that the King was at during that final season for him, which was Jeff Gordon's first season.
Right.
And I got in some Gordon stuff a couple weeks ago as well.
It was kind of funny. Isn't it funny how things work out? We would have never known that it was kind of like the king passing on the baton to a new era, if you will, in 1992. And then Gordon has now passed the baton on to a lot of the younger guys. It'll be interesting to see, since he passed the baton a couple of years ago, it'll be interesting to see who's going to take that and run with it, so to speak. That's the only thing I can think of offhand.
It will be good. William Byron in the number 24 car this year. Williams excelled at every division that he's been in and has worked his way on through and is up in the upper echelon of the Hendrick Motorsports organization with Chase Elliott. There's so many young guns that are out there now that have a shot at the victory this weekend and any weekend. The fields are so competitive now, but then you've got to always look at the Wiley vets now, Kyle Busch. You can just think about all the people that love him or hate him. The man can drive a race car and put on a show.
He can, you know, and I like him. I'm not anti Kyle Busch, but you kind of have to have a bad boy, don't you? You got to have a guy that you have like, it's kind of like in wrestling when you have the baby faces and the heels. You got to have some heels, if you will, in racing too. That makes the creates rivalries, right?
What a great point, Dave. You are exactly right. You've got to have a heel. You've got to have the heavy. You've got to have the man wearing the black hat.
Right.
White hat, great, but you've also got to have rivalries in the sport, and nothing's better for the sport than a good short track beating and banging. The trucks will be going off in 36 minutes because they didn't run Saturday. So the Camping World Truck Series, live from Martinsville in 36 minutes, 11 o'clock this morning, and then the Big Cup Show this afternoon at 2.
I just can't believe that it's always interesting to see how things are going to be on Monday with racing. But it's kind of special to have I know that we can't control Mother Nature. It's kind of neat to have something on Monday. It gives you something else to look forward to, right? Monday is always, Mondays are always tough if you're a race fan because you're like, you look forward to it all week, and then you're like, wow, it's gone, and now we have to wait another 5 or 6 days.
Yes, yes, and this will be a great way. I'm glad that they're going to be able to get the event in today. Both should go off without a problem. Yesterday, just with the weather and all the logistics, working everything out, because to put on a huge show like a NASCAR Cup event, it takes a lot of people, and the Highway Patrol, all of those people, getting all the logistics worked out. So Monday should be a great show today for them.
It should. I wanted to get you some final thoughts. What do you think overall for local tracks? I know in Wake County, where you and I first met in 2013, how are things looking there? What do you think?
Well, Wake County's got a huge show coming up on April the 7th. The Cars Tour is coming to town. It'll be the Solid Rock Carriers 123 laps. And really, the action kicks off on Friday afternoon, at 1:45 when the pits are open and it'll be trailer parking. And then Saturday is the big show. It's going to be 123 laps for the late model stock cars. Southern Ground Pounders will be running 25 laps. The mini stocks will be running 50 laps. And there'll be a 50-lap enduro. So that's Saturday, April the 7th. General admission tickets are $25. Kids in 8 through 12 are $12. A family four-pack is $60. And pit passes are $45. So check them out at www.wcsspeedway. Let me say that again, Dave. WCSSpeedway.com. That's the Wake County Speedway address. And look forward to seeing everybody there on, if not this Saturday, then next Saturday.
That's right, and you can always Google Wake County Speedway and certainly Southern National Speedway. I know East Carolina Speedway is going well too, right? I know you, you and I both have mutual friends that between owning the track and working there.
East Carolina is coming back strong this season. They've already had one event down there, and then one or two events down there. It's great track, great fan base of people down in eastern North Carolina. Want to tell everybody to go to their website as well, eastcarolinamotorspeedway.com. Check them out. Come out. See Becky Boone, John Vick, the whole gang. Come and see us at Wake County, Charlie Hansen, everybody at Wake, the Diaz family down at Southern National. But get out and support your local racetrack. That's where all the superstars from tomorrow are at today, your local speedway.
Speaking of which, I know we've been running a little bit long, but I wanted to mention, I know the Diaz family owning the where I'm currently employed like yourself, but their son Mason is, I know you and I talked before the interview, is really coming on strong. I saw him a few years ago at Wake County, and now he's doing really, really well, right?
He is. Mason has hooked up with Fury Race Cars and Mike Dorn Racing. He's coming off of a strong, strong speed weeks in Florida, where he won the Friday night 100-lap Pro Late Model Show, held off the gunslinger veteran Mike Skinner for the victory, was in Georgia last week, and ran second to Bubba Pollard. So Mason, his career is going along strong. He had a good run in the trucks last fall at Martinsville and has been approved to get on, I believe it's Phoenix and Iowa. So it's a stepping stone kind of deal where you run larger and larger racetracks. So Mason's moving right along, and what a wheel man.
He's tremendous, and Mason Diaz, make sure that you – I was going to say Mason Dixon. Mason Diaz, make sure you keep that name in mind, because he's going to be – he's certainly one to look out for in the near future, for sure. Mike Ray, you are such a scholar, a gentleman, and I appreciate you coming on. He's our racing expert, one of the many that – we have to come on this year, and you've been a great friend. I appreciate our friendship, and I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dave. Be looking forward to the next time that we do this again. Until then, safe travels, and good racing, everyone.
All right, that great interview from Mike Ray, brought to you by Veterinary Outpatient Clinic in Greenville at 4747B North Carolina 33 Highway. Call them at 758-0062, 758-0062. Of course, area code 252-758-0062. Well, this is our actual second now, our second fan of the week, and we have another great sponsor, and that's Russell's Hairstyling in Williamston. They're the sponsor of Fan of the Week, and the number there is 252-792-5059. Sarah Baker is the hairstylist. Kenneth White is the barber. They have, if you're a man or woman, you definitely will love them at Russell's Hairstyling. Call them in Williamston, 252-792-5059. Let's go to that great, great Fan of the Week, Mr. Moses Geddes, right now. You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Our Fan of the Week, the second one, is actually Moses Geddes. He is a volunteer at Vinet Medical Center. He is doing a lot of great things with his life. In fact, you're doing this all retired, right, Moses?
Yes, I am. I am completely retired.
And the great thing about it, when a lot of people like me that eventually have to go back to school again as a non-traditional student, you're retired, like retired, and you've gone back to school now, and you're going to be an elementary ed teacher?
Yes, I am. In fact, I start in the fall. I start my student teaching, and this is something that I've always wanted to do, and finally, I'm there. I'll be teaching in the fall.
We need a lot of men, and men listening right now, if you want a career change, Definitely, we need a lot of men in elementary education. So that's a whole other show and a whole other podcast that we could do. We're doing the Sports Objective Podcast, and being that you're a fan, I picked you because you have shown me that you're a true diehard fan of your teams. Tell me some of your teams and how and why you pull for them.
Okay, my favorite baseball team is the San Francisco Giants. I've always followed them from the days of Willie Mays, Jim Rehart, Felipe Alou, Hal Lanier. Always been a San Francisco Giant fan, and hopefully this year is going to be a very good year because it was very depressing last year.
I bet. Well, I'll tell you one thing. You're definitely a diehard fan if you go way back to the 60s because even with my Uncle Roger Craig, he kind of turned the ship there. They turned out in 1985 where they had over 100 losses. And I remember when he told me, he said, when I first went in the locker room, there was shotguns, golf clubs. The very first thing he did as the manager for the San Francisco Giants, he said, if it's not baseball related, get it out of here. But they had lost over 100 games by that point. Hit rock bottom, but you've seen them in the tough times and recently a lot of world championships.
Yes, I have. They when they got Buster Posey, things kind of change, and hopefully this year with the acquisition of Longoria and a few other players, I'm expecting a very good year.
And what are some other teams? I know you're from the state of South Carolina, and you're a graduate of South Carolina State, right?
Yes, I am. I'm a Bulldog, and I graduated in 1975. And during that time, we had a baseball team, and I actually played baseball. Played baseball with a few of my classmates ended up playing professional baseball. Gene Richards played for the San Diego Padres. He was one of my classmates, and he's done some very good things for the school and for the Padres.
I know that, correct me if I'm wrong, but South Carolina State is in Orangeburg, right? South Carolina, upstate South Carolina?
Yes, it is. It's in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Also, one other player that we had on our team, he actually played football, and he played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Donnie Shell. In fact, he was our center fielder.
What about, I'm a Redskin fan, what about downtown Charlie Brown? Wasn't he from South Carolina State? That's the first time that he was there with the Redskins in the early 80s.
Yes, he was. He was. He played after me, but he was. I think he was from Johns Island. And he also played there, and he was a very good athlete, but he came in after I graduated.
Well, Moses, I could talk to you for hours. You and I've got to know you for a good while now, and you're a great fan. We wanted to make you the Sports Objective Podcast Fan of the Week. Appreciate all you do. Good luck to the teaching, and I tell you what, those students in elementary, they're going to have a great teacher pretty soon.
Well, thank you very much, David, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, it's that time, and we're almost out of time, but before we forget, I want to mention this. We'll be talking about it more in the coming weeks. Anthony Atkinson, who was with the Barton College, remember that great big-time comeback in Division II basketball in 2007? It's one of the biggest basketball comebacks of all time. Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. He's now with the Harlem Globetrotters. He's been there for several years now. He's known as Ant with them. He has a basketball camp in Wilson, North Carolina. It's called Not Good But Great. June 11th through 15th is the date of the dates. And if you have a young kid, 4 to 10 years old, well, they have the morning session, 9:30 to 12. If you have a tween or teenager, 11 to 17 year olds, are going to be 1 to 3:30. It's only $100 per child, located at Peace Church, 2838 Tillman Road in Wilson. And make sure you go to Google him, Anthony Atkinson Jr., and you'll find out more information for sure. It's a great camp, only $100. That's very reasonable and great, great things giving back to the community. All right, we're about out of time. Thanks to our great sponsors. Plus, I want to thank our great guest, Paul Tedder, Dr. John Breen, Mike Ray, and Moses Geddes for Fan of the Week. I'm Dave Richmond. Until next time, you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.